When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there. Hey, Dave.
Hey, welcome again. To Really with Tom and Dave.
Yes.
I'm wearing the shirt I wore last time.
I'm wearing the same scarf
because it's becoming my Really uniform.
Still freezing in my office because this is part two of our recap of our trip to the Soul Foundation.
The weekend. And you are still freezing like Bob Cratchit.
I am. It's shivery, and now it's like nighttime outside, and my office for some reason, maybe it's haunted. Maybe we should do a paranormal episode because it's like 20 degrees colder than any other part of my house.
Yeah, and can you find a border of that cold spot like they do in?
No, it's
haunting.
It's all cold, and it's like I write, and it's hard to write. My hands get cold. I get arthritis.
You got to get those fingerless gloves that Bob Cratchit wore.
you're really working the. It's a, well, I guess it's the holidays are approaching.
Yeah,
this is you know, that's sort of appropriate. Hey, let's without further ado, let's get we left on a cliffhanger. I think we were about halfway through day one because there's so much to absorb.
We had covered page one. We'd covered. That's page one of day one, and I was off mic. Page one of day one, and now we can move on to page two of day one, because there was just so many amazing people showed up for this thing.
This was the
amazing people and us.
If you're dropping in on our episode for the first time, or this channel, or you've stumbled into it by accident, you were looking for how to do paper mache, and you just stumbled onto Really with Tom and Dave. Please like and subscribe us. You know, it doesn't cost you anything, and we would be thrilled and be grateful.
Maybe you're listening to this on a dare.
Sure. That could be it. Some sort of punishment.
But you can't listen to two old guy, white guys talk about UFOs for an hour. But you can't.
Hey, this is a great way to spend your time. Like and subscribe Really with Tom and Dave on our YouTube channel, or anywhere where your lovely podcasts are found. You can
our teletype feed.
Yeah. Just check us out on Instagram,
ticker tape,
TikToks, these kinds of things, Spotify's. Yep. I don't know where we are. Are we on that?
Yep.
So the Soul Foundation, just briefly, is put together by Stanford microbiologist Gary Nolan and Peter Skafish, who is an anthropologist, and also
and David Grush.
David Grush, the famous whistleblower.
Intelligence officer
who worked for the Air Force and blew the whistle on reverse engineering programs inside our government. This was a symposium, a think tank, sort of a two-day TED talk about how to prepare the Earth for disclosure, which which is happening. No matter how you want to put your head in the sand, doubt it, refute it, debunk it,
yeah.
Disclosure.
It is a reality.
Is happening. So
yeah.
The idea of like, are there things in the sky? Are the UFO like, yeah, it's real. And it's about 30 miles behind us in the rearview mirror because disclosure is underway. How to prepare religions, society, people,
and it's not,
the media.
We're not just talking about machines, weird machines in the sky. We're talking about the revelation that there are non-human intelligences on the earth interacting with humanity, and that our military and our government and private industry and government contractors, the military contractors, people like Raytheon, maybe Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, these people are all involved and with non-human intelligences and the non-human technologies.
And if you think this is all just conspiracy theory, well, then maybe you should look at the Chuck Schumer amendment to the Defense Department budget, which lines it all up in gory detail, using the term non-human intelligence over 17 times in this legislation. Mm-hmm. And it is entitled the 2023 UAP Disclosure Act, or the UAP Disclosure Act of 2023.
It outlines basically through its the parameters of the legislation, kind of outlines where what they think exists.
Mm-hmm.
The people writing the legislation,
which means
craft, biologics, which means bodies,
people,
alien
people, alien
people,
or whatever they are. Will
people from the future, perhaps?
There was a talk that we'll get to later with Carl Nell, who was an intelligence officer, also with the Air Force, naval intelligence. Who worked with David Grush, the whistleblower, and he apparently was one of the architects of this legislation. And he gave I don't even know what to say. The talk he gave was one of the most stunning speeches of sort of official disclosure I've heard, that I think has maybe ever been given. He walked us through the legislation and the whys and wherefores and hows, and though he did not rip the curtain back, he was just pounding on the curtain
and laid out a potential time frame for disclosure, which isn't to say, and I think, you know, I've noticed on Twitter a lot of, or not Twitter, X, whatever it's called, a lot of people getting hung up on the fact that he was saying disclosure would come in 2030, which isn't exactly what he was saying. He was saying that by 2030, everyone, all of humanity, would be living with a daily commonplace knowledge of non-human intelligences.
Yeah, and he was explicit in saying that disclosure is happening right now. And that the name of the legislation is not an accident. It is entitled the UAP Disclosure Act of 2023, people.
And in its cover page, it says Chuck Schumer.
Majority Leader of the Senate, not a guy not on a late night radio show,
No. And not a cab driver that you wish would just pull over and let you out. No, it's Chuck Schumer, the majority leader in the Senate,
fairly high profile government person,
and a pretty conservative politician. I mean, not in his politics, but not a guy who's going off on strange tangents.
Not at all.
The cover page of it states that the American people, in its presenting its reasons for the legislation, the American people have a right to know the truth about non-human intelligences.
Plural.
That's in the cover page.
I came away from this whole weekend was like, this is all so fucked up. This is crazy. How do I process this?
The amazing thing is that maybe 2% of the population is even at all aware of that this is going on. Maybe 2%. That's pretty, I think I'm being generous.
Yeah.
I'm not sure the vast bulk of humanity does not know this.
Maybe
is
it's
happening.
A blessing that they're not paying attention. I mean, it's a sort of like it's.
Well, been, otherwise, well, we wouldn't have gotten into the Soul Foundation symposium if there was like more demand.
That's true. Yeah. I'm kind of happy about it, to be honest. The thing is, most of this symposium was spent grappling with the idea of disclosure, grappling with the effects of disclosure, arguing and debating over what type of disclosure is the least destructive to society. It wasn't even getting into the motivations of whatever is flying around in our skies or living in our oceans or whatever the fuck it is. But it was mostly about just what will we do to ourselves in the midst of this discovery that we are not at all alone in the universe and that it may just be living with us, among us, with its own plans and agendas.
Yes. And it was basically a very practical look at given that this is now not. Conjecture, you know, we're there to debate whether or not, you know, UFOs exist or whether or not there are non-human intelligences. Everyone there was just going on the basis that it is happening, it is real, it is true. And since that is the case, how do we prepare? How do we go forward? How do we, you know, communicate this to the public? How do we galvanize the government to make this public for all the people?
Yeah, what's the safest, least disruptive way to get everybody used to this idea?
What are the potential benefits and risks going forward?
Yes, there is a term, catastrophic disclosure, which was thrown around. Which is like running out into the street with your underwear, holding your UFO and saying, I've got it. It's here. This is it. You know, and that's apparently is catastrophic.
So seldom modifies a good thing.
Yeah.
As an adjective.
Felt like a
catastrophic. Yeah.
Can't go well when you're in a catastrophic situation. But
I had the most catastrophic orgasm. It was amazing.
No, you don't use it in that context. I mean, you could.
Yeah. Oh,
Have I had a catastrophic orgasm? I mean, I guess that's like when you like. It's like when you fart and have an orgasm. Is that a catastrophic orgasm?
I don't know. I think it has to be worse than that.
Okay. Well, we can use our imagination.
It has to be. Yeah. It has to be where you're just. Yeah. You're quietly calling a cab and promising to never come back.
Okay. Right. Well, that's for another podcast. Because I want to hear all about that for sure. But the speakers that we left, we had Jacques Vallée, who came after Gary Nolan.
Yeah. Jacques Vallée, the great French scientist and venture capitalist. I keep forgetting that.
He's Stanford. He's an inventor. I mean, this is a storied career.
Project Blue Book with J. Allen Hynek. He created the database and organized all of the files for Project Blue Book. He's also instrumental in helping to design the internet.
Just that.
He was involved with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when you throw that in. It was a
venture capitalist.
He's like
Frenchman.
He's French, which... shouldn't be a strike against him. He travels like the Pope at that event. I mean, he was surrounded by an entourage. He's this sort of, I didn't even have the nerve to go up. Did you go up to him?
No, I didn't. Yeah. The two people I didn't work up the courage to talk to were Jacques Vallée and Hal Puthoff. Those are the two people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hal Puthoff. And
they both seemed very pleasant. Like
everybody
nice
seemed pleasant. Everybody seemed very nice.
Shyness
exactly.
Was the problem. It's not like Gary Nolan who hates us.
I know. Don't hate us, Gary. We love you. But yes.
Unrequited love is still love.
It's still love. It's still love. Yeah. And he's done a good thing putting this whole thing together. He should be on that big panel that they put together for the
Definitely
panel of nine. He's got to be the guy.
The nine person panel. Yes. Well, I guess we should explain that. People might not know that in the legislation before we get to Jacques Vallée. That Chuck Schumer wrote, along with Rounds,
Senator Rounds,
who's a Republican, co-authored it. Because again, all the UFO legislation is bipartisan and unanimous in its various committees, and this has been passed out of the Senate. this legislation. Yeah, it's just waiting.
They're fearful that the House is going to try to kill it.
Yeah. What's his name? Mike, another Mike from
Ohio.
From Ohio.
Yeah, the Wright Patterson Mike. There's Mike Rogers and then Mike.
Mike Rogers. Yeah. Mike Rounds is actually on board, helped write it, Republican.
Turner.
And, Mike Turner. Mike Turner is the one who whose district includes Wright Patterson Air Force Base.
Yeah, the fix is in. Blue Book was, we'll see if they succeed. Hopefully, they don't succeed. But
But anyway, there's going to be a 9-person panel set up under this legislation that will review anything that the military and the intelligence community wants to keep classified about UAP. Because the legislation automatically declassifies all information related to UAP, craft, materials, biologics, non-human, evidence of non-human technologies.
You're right. It assumes declassification, and then they have to go about deciding why stuff needs to be classified. I mean, this is going to be...
They have to make an argument. Yeah, they have to make an argument to keep it classified, and if they can't convince the panel... then it becomes
declassified. Could be like a pack of wild dogs going at this thing.
Yes, and the president has to sign off on all of these what the panel decides.
And the panel is going to be like it's going to have people from the humanities, from the sciences, from anthropology. There's a whole kind of it's right out of Contact. It's right out of Arthur C. Clarke.
Yes, and for some reason, one guy that plays Spoons.
I thought that was weird.
Yeah,
thought that was weird.
But you know. I'm not here making policy.
It's not an easy craft, though. I mean, it's not easy to play spoons.
No, it sounds, you know, you think it's easy, but it's not. Try it,
Completely, I understand. Yeah. So Jacques Vallée was the next speaker, and he's also the
famous UFO researcher, author of dozens of books. For people who don't know, he was the person that the French researcher in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, played by Francois Truffaut, who, if you don't know, is a French director.
Jacques Vallée is cooler.
The Nouvelle Vague.
Yeah.
But that character was based on Jacques Vallée.
Yes. And it's a good movie. If you haven't seen it, holds up.
It's a great movie. And it was based on a lot of stuff that
we're talking about here.
J. Allen Hynek and Jacques Vallée told Steven Spielberg about the phenomena.
So what did you think of his speech? It was a little bit kind of overview. Like, I didn't have a ton of specifics written down. There was the story about the frog.
Yes. Which is a pretty good joke. I don't usually like jokes, but it's a pretty good joke.
It's pretty good. Do you want to tell it? Do you remember it?
The joke? Well, I think I can remember it. There was a story of an older man was walking down the street, and he sees... off the side of the road, he sees this. He sees the frog, and then he notices that the frog is wearing a golden crown, a little golden crown. And he goes down and he picks up the frog, and he's looking at this frog with a golden crown. And then it turns out the frog can talk, and the frog says to him, "I'm not really a frog. In reality, I am a beautiful princess, and if you will kiss me, I will be restored to my human form, and we will live as man and wife happily forever and ever, and we will have children, and everything will be great, and we'll have children, and it'll be good." And the man looks at the frog. He's an older man, and he says, "You know what? At my age, I'd rather have a talking frog."
Yes, which was his analogy for the whole UAP government conversation. I think was sort of his approach there, which I thought was interesting, and sort of like they don't kind of want to be bothered at this stage, or they just sort of were hoping it would just kind of, you know, it's too complicated to get into.
To get to the truth, to get back to the reality.
Yeah. And so,
to get to the beautiful princess.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting that, I mean, I would say it was sort of like, I don't know, felt like a little passing of the torch. Do you know what I mean? Like, it seemed like those assembled were in the nuts and bolts of it. And he had been kind of carrying this for decades. And, you know, it seemed to be time to honor him and honor his legacy and continue the work and move forward. It was really, I mean, it was lovely. Gary Nolan's introduction, he was very emotional introducing Jacques Vallée. Obviously, Jacques Vallée's had a huge impact on Gary Nolan's interest in this work, and it, you know, influenced it. And they've obviously been in, you know, communicating in terms of getting him materials or things that Jacques Vallée has collected through the years. So it was a very, just a lot of good emotional energy there and incredibly cool to see him and hear him speak.
I think it's fair to say, yeah, that Jacques Vallée is probably one of the most sort of important, not just researchers in UFOs or UAP and, you know, the related phenomena, but also one of the most important thinkers. Mm-hmm. On the subject, you know, that he's, you know, that he sort of philosophized and theorized about what this all could mean and what, you know, what could be behind the phenomena, in a way that I think was way ahead of everybody else. And everyone in the field acknowledges a great debt to Jacques Vallée for broadening the discussion, and giving it and bringing a seriousness, an academic seriousness to the subject, you know, and a very sort of a science-based approach.
Yes, respected for decades on this topic when it was not easy to be respected on this topic. And you know, really, he's a visionary and someone who has, like I said, just maintained this, kept its, you know, the credibility and legitimacy of this topic as it is now entering no matter how hard the media tries to resist it, it is entering the bloodstream.
And on top of that, he's also one of the great practitioners of frog-based humor.
Which is not an easy...
That's not
easy to pull off, which is why I had you tell the frog princess joke. But following him was Dr. Diane Pasulka.
Yes,
who
one of the people who acknowledges his influence.
She does, and you've read more of her.
I've read her book American Cosmic, which is a very interesting. She is a religious studies professor.
Yes, one of several sort of dealing with this arena of the topic
where she teaches. She wrote a book. I guess her field of expertise is studying, you know, religious phenomena and texts and its impacts on culture, but as she said, it's in religious studies, you know, they don't study, you know, whether or not religion is true or not. They just sort of look at its, you know, how religions develop and what their impact is on humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so she decided that she was going to her belief was that the UFO community, she thought, was the beginning stages of a new religion forming, and she wanted to go out and study this new religion as it was being formalized and developed culturally. And she went out and started researching it, and then she found, to her astonishment, that wasn't exactly the case.
Mm. Okay.
That she started interviewing scientists and people in military and particularly a lot of scientists that she met, who revealed to her that no, it's not just a belief system. It's about things that are really happening. Mm-hmm. It's about real craft and real impacts and real evidence and so that took her sort of outside of her original sort of comfort zone of this being just a culturally interesting phenomena of human origin. And she realized, no, there's all these scientists that are actually interacting with this technology and involve with the UAP issue at a very deep level and are doing interesting and secret work on it. Like, you know, most people that she was, like in American Cosmic, she's sort of, it's part of, it's kind of like a road story of traveling with this the scientist who she calls James in American Cosmic, who after the book
turns
came
out
was Gary Nolan, one of the three founders of the Soul Foundation and the molecular biologist at Stanford University.
She told a crazy story that I think you're doing a great job of kind of encapsulating her journey. I found her speech a little, her talk was a little hard for me to follow a little bit, super interesting. But the one thing that I was like, holy smokes, was, I mean, her theme had to do with fire from the gods. It had to do with the myth of Prometheus. It had to do with the myth of mm-hmm. Frankenstein. It had to do with, well, I think arguably the literalization of some of these myths. You know, it seems like mm-hmm. the deeper we go into the technology of this, the irony is that it is seeming to bring us closer to these most basic myths that define us and define
yes.
our religions and our culture.
Yes. And the notion that they aren't, you know, I think that they aren't metaphor. They aren't purely metaphor. No. The tales of miracles may actually have some a basis to them in the same way that we are basically witnessing what appear to me miraculous events in the UAP field.
And you may know more about this than I do, but she was talking about this trip she took with Gary Nolan, which they were taken by another person who I guess was in the intelligence field. They were blindfolded. Yes. I believe they were in New Mexico.
They're in New Mexico, yes. And they were blindfolded by, I guess, someone that I think the pseudonym for him was Taylor P, I believe.
And taken to...
And he still is that identity.
Still Taylor P. And taken to a crash site
yes,
that is
in New Mexico.
In New Mexico.
Which isn't the Roswell site.
Not Roswell.
We know that. It wasn't the Roswell site, but it is a crash site
that's called,
in New Mexico from the 40s.
That they call the Donation.
The Donation site. Yeah, the Donation site, I think, right?
Yeah. And they call it that because it just seemed like this thing was just left there for them to like pick up and go study, apparently.
Yeah.
Which just,
and in fact, Gary Nolan went out into this field and found material that he is now studying.
And led to this group of researchers called the Invisibles.
Yes. Yeah, or that's what Diana Pasulka's, she dubbed them the Invisibles.
Fair enough.
Which, of course, turns out to have a parallel in something that J. Allen Hynek referred to the Invisible College.
Right,
which was the group of scientists back in the 50s and 60s who were secretly working on the UFO problem, but were not doing it publicly because it was career suicide and they couldn't. And of course, J. Allen Hynek and Jacques Vallée were part of the Invisible College, two of the only people that were sort of public about it. In fact, Jacques Vallée wrote a book called The Invisible College, which I have not read because I'm not a very well-read man.
You're a very well-read man, but you can't. It's hard to get to all of these. And this is a lot of, you know, there's a lot of good sort of material on this topic, and a lot of great research has been done.
Yeah, so Diana Pasulka referred to all these scientists who are working at high levels with us in secretive parts of, I think, government and academia. On the UAP or UFO issue, and you know, and doing scientific research, and as she said, actually coming up with creating products, creating actual wealth from some of these researches that they're doing. That they're making advancements,
which would make a lot of sense of why they don't want to let go of them.
Yeah.
If these are happening in some of these aerospace companies, that there's stuff they're actually getting out of it. There was a lot of talk. David Grush, the whistleblower, was on Rogan, and they were talking about that fiber optics may have been discovered through reverse engineered materials.
Well, that's the basis of, where do I have it? Somewhere around here. I've got the...
You'll never find it. There it is.
There it is. I know. I got to alphabetize my books at some point.
It's a snake. It would have bit you.
But there it is. The Day After Roswell, written by Colonel Philip J. Corso, retired, along with an author, William J. Burns.
They all start talking after they're retired.
Yes. And what he talked about was that in the 60s, I mean, again, he's a guy who worked on, he worked with directly with Eisenhower during the Second World War. He was apparently a liaison with a priest who would later become Pope during the war.
So cool and, friends.
Yes. And then in the 60s, he was given this portfolio. You know, he's an intelligence officer. Again, he had briefed the president. There's lots of photos of him, like, at the White House. Basically, he was given a filing cabinet. He was told, here, you know, look at this filing cabinet, go through it, and look at the material that's in there, and then see what you can make of it. And basically, he was told that there was basically artifacts in there from the Roswell crash. And if there was anything in there that scientists were currently working on, anything similar to it, sort of feed this recovered material to them. So, like, say they had something, you know, they were researchers who were trying to develop something like fiber optics. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like we got these technologies wholesale from the craft, from the material, but that there would be a scientist working on something like fiber optics, and Philip Corso's job was to take these things from his filing cabinet and say, here, have a look at this. Maybe this will give you some indications of where you should go in developing this tech. Okay. And so that basically was, apparently also had something like a microchip, that they would take to people who were working on developing microchips. Feeding this stuff into industry as it was, you know, progressing and kind of accelerating the pace in those industries. So that's the story of this book.
And more or less sort of what she was referencing in her talk and some of the things I've written down here. How do we communicate with post-biologicals? I'm just randomly throwing out there from her speech, but yeah. It was like one of those things of like, okay, I need to just stop and absorb for a minute. I don't know, how do we communicate with the post-biologicals? I guess our baby AI will help us do that.
There are days when I wake up and I feel a bit like I am a post-biological.
Yeah, me too, man. It's cold in my office. I'm approaching post-biology right now.
Yeah, but it's true. Yeah, so these are the things. These are the sort of, I guess, potential future tech that people are working on.
And she believes there needs to be a new fourth realm of learning that she was calling the emergent phenomenon. And it was very cool and led into one of the more academic discussions, which was Peter Skafish, who's the third point of the triangle, the Saul Foundation founders, gave a very interesting speech about conceptualizing non-human intelligence.
Yes. And divorcing ourselves of our anthropocentric or anthropomorphizing.
There was a lot of anthropomorphizing talk, which, I mean, essentially he was asking what about us prevents us from conceiving of these UAP, because they are not simply technology. And even though the overall focus of the military and the intelligence apparatus and the legislation, everything is really focused on kind of the technology or what was found in the craft. But he was saying that these were really like bio machines, that consciousness can't be taken out of the equation. There is some unity in what these things are, that
between the craft and the biologics.
Yeah, that there's something in about consciousness and these materials that in our modern world we simply don't have the tools anymore to understand what they could be. And he was sort of saying that since the 17th century, as we have sort of broken the world in our modern brains into these domains of art and politics,
the Cartesian revolution.
Yes. And economy and religion. We have sort of, in the process made it less, made ourselves less capable of even understanding what could be going on. And he equated it back to kind of, I guess, the animism and the approach of looking at things like a world where the minerals and the hillsides and the trees have politics and have art and have religion and, you know, and really like he was doing that kind of deep dive and of just sort of indigenous thought and self-conscious plants and rocks and, and that sort of world that
We've divorced ourselves from magical notions, I guess.
That
we may need to reacquaint ourselves with the idea of magic, because whatever these entities are, and whatever their technology is something that, you know, as Arthur C. Clarke said, you know, sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Sure, and also probably would save us some ontological shock, because these cultures tend to we're kind of living with these ideas in ways that we are not and yes, we do of, not of,
yeah of you know the like the indigenous religions often talk about beings non-corporeal beings from other dimensions, star people. You know, and the fact that these, notions show up in, the peoples that lived in, New Mexico and, California and Texas, and they also show up in Australia. And these ideas have been around for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a lot to chew on, because some of the stuff I wrote here, like that sentience is way more ubiquitous than we might realize or understand. Kind of a promiscuous sentience, a kind of unimaginable body. We could be dealing with a UAP collective. We could be dealing with some sort of mind collective. And so he thinks we just need to start trying to now. There was a little bit of him saying, so everything that you're saying, all these talks, it's all great, but it's all meaningless because we can't really conceive of what's going on. So there was a little bit of that where I was like, I don't think there's some wisdom happening here. And I don't think that was probably his overall point. But it was funny for a minute, sort of another academic came up and they were battling over like Hegelian world, and then Peter Skaper said we weren't going to be talking about Hegel here, and it was a whole
they almost came to blows.
it was getting
but very, very academic blows.
Yeah, it was,
I don't think anyone would have been horribly hurt.
A little testy, little testy over the philosophers, but very kind of again, really interesting sort of grapple with the odd and the very, very, very weird. The deeper you go, the weirder and more diffuse and difficult to define this phenomenon is.
It also kind of winds back into like Diana Pazelka's view, which is that she has been in her religious studies, and in a sense, the Catholic Church is very prepared for non-human intelligences because it's basically core to their beliefs. Mm-hmm. Angels and demons, are non-human intelligences that exist in another dimension. And that's, that's something that Catholics believe wholeheartedly.
Which goes back to this literalization of the myths, where I found that one of the sort of strangest ideas to climb on top of was just how much closer it is bringing us to these very original stories that, may have just much more kind of potency than I would have ever thought of the future, But the future is bringing us closer to our past.
Materialist atheist, it's hard for me to swallow. Yeah, and I still cling to that. I think to me, my convenient exit is I can go, well, yeah, all right, all those stories may be true, but I think it's because the reality behind them is the same reality that's behind what we're experiencing. Mm-hmm. It is these non-human intelligences. Mm-hmm. It is possibly aliens or pan-dimensional beings that basically that we interpreted in the past as angels and demons, you know?
Yeah.
And now I think it's the same thing that we're encountering. But in the past, we didn't have a technological way of viewing the world. We didn't have, sufficiently advanced science. So our default way of thinking before the scientific revolution of the 1700s, I guess, was magic. People would debate how many angels could dance on the head of a pin.
Yes.
You know, and it wasn't, you know, it would be serious debates.
It was our capacity. Yeah, we were working with our capacity to comprehend at the time. And yet, obviously, mm-hmm. they were working with some basis in fact, which is.
Yeah.
Eye-popping in itself.
People were witnessing events. You know, going, and you know, obviously, there's records of it going through. You know, back to the times of the Roman Empire of, flaming shields mm-hmm. in the air over battlefields. Are documented.
They seem to be curious about us when we kill each other.
Yeah,
which I guess would be of interest. You know, as opposed to my morning routine, which is not as interesting.
Well, historically, we've been pretty entertained by us killing each other as well.
Good point. Yes. Yeah. Which leads us, I'll share one really, I don't know if it's appropriate.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
For me to share this, but this is what it was like being at the conference. And I won't give away who. Sure. I will say I was walking to the restroom and I observed a hushed conversation underway. And I won't share who was having the conversation with who, but it was one of the luminaries with one of the audience members, but it was being whispered about. And as I walked past, this is what I heard. The autopsy photos are authentic. And I kept walking, and it was somebody that would be in the position to know this. And I stopped. I was like, do I dive into this conversation has nothing to do with me? What photos are we talking about? This was sort of the kind of thing that was going on there of like I went and then probably couldn't pee because I was so preoccupied with what I had just heard. Yeah. But it was,
well, I heard a similar thing with somebody else talking about how they were asked, somebody, I forget who it was. Maybe it was Juan, who was sitting next to us. Another UFO guy. Asked Hal Puthoff if one of the reasons that they won't come forward about Roswell is that in order to discuss Roswell openly, and they would have to then disclose the hybrid breeding programs.
Yeah, that would be bad.
And apparently Hal Puthoff said, well, there's something to that.
Yeah. There were a few, again, jaw-dropping statements that were, these are the gatekeepers. I mean, a lot of these people are gatekeepers. They have been involved
in intelligence and with the government and military on all of these projects, some of them going back 40 years
So Hal Puthoff and Russell Targ and Chris Mellon
and the people the people that were at this conference. Now, there were other people that were not at this conference, notable people. But those that were there, a lot of them are, as they say, read in. They made it clear that they weren't going to share classified information at this symposium. They made it clear it wasn't okay to share classified information at this symposium, but there was so much crazy inference. I mean, we were dancing around the topic to the point that, like, there is an absolute given at this conference that there's ships, you know, that there are ships, that there's technology, that the writers of the legislation know about it. As you said, Dave, non-human intelligence says that there is a plural to this. Going back to your angels and demons statement. And the one thing that this panel with Leslie Kane and Hal Puthoff and Larry McGuire, your fellow Canadian.
Yes. We should also mention Leslie Kane, of course, is one of the authors of the 2017 New York Times, the Sunday Times front page story about UFOs and glowing auras and secret projects.
Talk about a luminary at this point, and broke the Grush story at the debrief.
Ralph Blumenthal, and
both guests of the Really Podcast. Like and subscribe if you enjoy what you're hearing, because we bring you all the finest in of UAP superstars.
Yes, and Leslie is is one of the gravitational centers of the UAP community.
Oh, absolutely. And she had a panel. Dr. Hal Puthoff is a physicist who has been sort of behind the scenes for half a century dealing with this, it seems, dealing with these various programs and studies. And Larry McGuire what would be his equivalent in U.S. politics?
He's a member of parliament. So it would be, it would be like being a congressman.
Okay. All right.
Or a senator.
Yeah. So it was very cool that he was here at this event.
Closer to Congress. Yeah. House of Representatives. Yeah. So he's the representative of a riding, as we call them, in Manitoba, I believe.
Okay.
But he's a member of parliament. He's the only member of Canadian government who seems to be interested in getting Canada to address this issue. And he's the only one seems to be pushing. Definitely lagging way behind.
Slow
the
to the game. So like, what is, and this is not, again, like one of the things we've also been learning, this is not a U.S. thing. This is a global thing that the reason disclosure hasn't been happening is because of a Cold War arms race of this material and who has it and who's learning from it. And that's one of the biggest issues. It was talked about incessantly throughout these 2 days about this idea of other, how do we negotiate with our partners? How do we make this international? How do we not make this an arms race? How do we, there were suggestions of like, don't call it another Manhattan project. We should call it another CERN project based on the sort of the particle accelerator, so that it feels more pure science than something militaristic or something that we need to win a war over.
Yeah. Something that excludes the rest of the world,
Yeah. And that was a big part of several talks, but some of the highlights of this one was, Hal Puthoff shared the fact that in 1969, when Blue Book was shut down, the truth was that in that same memo that shut down Blue Book, it opened an entirely different study and renewed the work. So again, a sort of very clear example of the government sort of saying one thing to the public and doing the exact opposite as it relates to this topic by continuing the research. And he told a story that he was called by a top intelligence person to participate in a study that he said would be the most important work he ever does, the most important meeting he would ever go to. He was presented with a hypothetical, which was, let's say that Russia, China, and the U.S. all had crashes that they were retrieved, you know, UFOs at the time, let's say.
Mm-hmm. And flying saucers.
And he was asked with this other sort of group of kind of scientists and whatnot in this very secret meeting to basically come up with a disclosure plan. Do we disclose to the public? How do we disclose to the public? And they were asked to vote on it.
They had to give a positive negative score of either plus 9 or minus 9
on a number of different issues. Right. It was sort of like how this would impact various parts of the world.
How would it affect the stock market? How would it affect religions? How would it affect, what if one company has possession of these materials and another company doesn't? How do we equalize that?
Yeah, and if they can unfair advantage.
Yeah.
And so he said that even though most of the people there were inclined to disclosure or were, you know, sort of that was their kind of default state of mind.
Yeah, but they would all tally their plus minus scores.
And they all ended up against disclosure.
Yeah. They all came up with the negative scores.
Yeah, which...
And then apparently there were other groups separately that went through the same exercise, mm-hmm. like multiple other groups of scientists or whatever.
And I wrote in my notes, it sounds like Hal Puthoff's responsible for non-disclosure. It was essentially kind of him coming clean, and I was like, thanks, Hal. He is a... he's a really fascinating guy and was definitely...
Yes, and
one of these real.
You know, he was part of the Stanford Research Institute's famous work on remote viewing as well, along with Russell Targ, who was also there. Mm-hmm. So he's he's been involved with a lot of very interesting things, and I think he was involved with OSAP, and I think he may have worked on NIDS as well. And
he said it one. Okay, go ahead.
And he was also a member of the To the Stars Academy when it launched, along with Lou Elizondo and Chris Mellon and Jim Semivan and who else was there? Somebody from Skunkworks. I forget his name.
I don't know who that was. Lukatsky?
No, it wasn't Lukatsky. It was somebody I can't remember.
Because a couple of things that he said, like...
But I remembered a bunch of names, and that's really good for me.
I was proud of you. I mean, you were rattling them off there.
Yeah.
One of the things
he said... I only know your name because it's on the screen.
Yeah.
So
I'm the Tom part of the Tom and Dave. He said that they knew that there were UAP UFOs being housed, that he became aware of this. I'm going to paraphrase because, again, he was doing this sort of like he did a lot of dancing around the UFOs thing in terms of the what we have. But he said that they wanted to go to around the world, around the globe, to all these experts to essentially ask them to imagine 50 years in the future of their sciences. To kind of project what those sciences might be, I think in an effort to help those trying to reverse engineer. And what Hal Puthoff wanted to do was basically bring them the ships, show them the materials and help get help trying to figure out what this stuff was. So I'm telling the story a little bit in reverse. So essentially what happened is like, they wanted to bring these ships. They knew there were ships. They were told there were ships that we were trying to figure them out. But when they went to try to get the material, they said, oh, well, no, this is so compartmentalized. It's been broken down into so many pieces. There is absolutely no way to create a whole. There is no way to share all the data together. That is impossible. There's no way we can do it. So they were sent out with how I started the story, with this false story to essentially ask to try to get these guys to give them information like, okay, imagine 50 years in the future, your sciences, how, you know, what would that look like to essentially help them break it down? But he did bring up this very, very important revelation, something that James Lakatsky, who is his boss in this sort of research.
In OSAP. Yeah, James Lukansky was the man who put OSAP together.
And he has recently come forward with the book we talked about with George Knapp. And he talked about it with
Colm Kelleher.
George and Jeremy, mm-hmm. with Colm Kelleher, which is this book, which is Inside the U.S. Government Covert UFO Program, Initial Revelations, published by the Defense Department. And
for one thing, for people who still think that things like the Tic Tac event are debunked, read the chapter on the initial analysis of the Tic Tac event. It's pretty amazing. But then an even more amazing thing, and I'll let you tell
it. No, I mean, it. He says in this book, he even says on the back here, these things are so redacted and fucked with the defense, like the wording is so insane, but
yeah, to meet their Dobser requirements.
The big reveal, the grammar, I can't even. But he stated that the United States was in possession of a craft of unknown origin. He states the United States was in possession of a craft of unknown origin and had successfully gained access to its interior. The craft had streamlined configuration suitable for aerodynamic flight, but no intakes, exhaust, wings, or control services. It appeared not to have an engine, fuel tanks, or fuel. What was the purpose of this craft? Lakatsky asked. And Hal Puthoff spoke about talking with Lakatsky, who would apparently share no more information about this for classified reasons.
George and Jeremy torturously tried to get him to go beyond what was written in the book.
They did everything they could
on the Weaponized podcast.
But this is disclosure.
And Lakatsky, he's an intelligence man. Mm-hmm. That's what he is. You know, he's also a scientist, but he's an intelligence officer. And he said, what is in the book is what I'm authorized to. I was authorized to say, and that's as far as I'm going to go.
And what Hal Puthoff said was, if Lakatsky says we have a craft, you can absolutely take it to the bank. Was his big quote.
And he said also said the same thing about David Grush.
Yes, he did. He vouched for him, and he said that if Grush said this, that you can also absolutely take it to the bank. He said Lakatsky would know. He was inside it. He ran the program.
And imagine how confused the people at that bank are going to be.
And people, there's going to be a rush.
Yeah. What are you? Why are you? Why did you take this to me?
Yeah.
I'm a banker.
They don't know what they're doing. But it was. He says Lakatsky was the highly responsible intelligence official. That he was absolutely would, and that it sounds like he. We've been inside it. We've been inside a ship. And this was part of the fascinating panel.
Yeah. So people keep, people, of course, keep harping on, well, everything Grush says is secondhand. It's just hearsay, mm-hmm. Well, here we have James Lakatsky, mm-hmm. hands on.
They're not conspiracy theorists. They're not people with a reality show. They're not They are intelligence officials cleared at the highest, highest levels of government sharing this information.
With a science background, with PhDs.
Yeah. So it's not coming from us. We're just reporting the shit. But mm-hmm. the other thing that was brought up, which was interesting, is he said he thinks Biden, is keeping this issue at arm's length and letting, with the Schumer legislation, sort of leaving it over there. But if it passes, he'll have to make a decision of whether or not he wants to be the disclosure president.
I said we'll know pretty quickly mm-hmm. if Biden wants to be the disclosure president, and which took me a little by surprise because I was going on the assumption that because this legislation was, according to Schumer, was written in consultation with the executive branch.
I don't know
that Biden was in on the discussions. So I was going on the assumption that, well, I guess Biden must be, he must be aware and must be open to this happening. But if Hal Puthoff says the opposite, then he's probably more knowledgeable and definitely smarter than me. So
yeah, I don't think there's any question of that. Offense. I couldn't even figure out isotopes earlier. The thing is that what was very clear, or at least was being said repeatedly or suggested, that Congress was pushing for disclosure and the executive was resisting disclosure. And
that seemed to be what Hal was getting at.
That there are senators and reps that want to know,
they know their shit's being kept from them. The executive knows it's keeping things from them, doesn't want to give up the goods from these various agencies. So there is that, that would, to me, was beginning to crystallize and help me understand what sort of the signals that we've been getting are so weird from the government. You have like Arrow set up, which is, as Chris Mellon explained, a completely kind of counterintuitive, it is not built for disclosure. It's essentially a sort of revamp of Blue Book, this sort of like, okay, we're going to look like we're doing stuff, but not actually do any stuff. And we're going to minimize it as much as possible.
That Sean Kirkpatrick can only say what DOD authorizes him to say.
Yes. So they seem incurious about the most obviously gobsmacking information coming out from Grush and everyone else. So they're, so that is a sort of executive branch sort of endeavor where you have the Congress having the hearings, trying to get everything out and seeming trying to talk about it as much as possible. So that would make sense that you've got two branches of government more or less vying for control over this topic. And I thought that was fascinating.
I agree. And it's the fact that there's, what's the term, internecine,
some sort of warfare
competition. Going on in within the government, within branches of the government, about what the people should know or not know, or maybe just what, you know, some politicians don't want to have to deal with.
And that was day one.
That was day one. That takes us with that bunch and Larry Maguire. Lou Elizondo was supposed to be in that panel, but he couldn't make it because of a family obligation.
I know, it would have been really, really cool to see him, but hopefully everything's okay with his family. And the next day, we may not get to all of day two on this session, but there were a couple cool interactions. Like, for instance, we got a little bolder. We started to meet some folks. I was like, damn it, I'm gonna make some connections here. We met Chris Mellon that morning, day two. It was interesting. I asked him what he thought we should, I would love to have him on the podcast, but I asked him what people like us should be talking about, or what's not being talked about enough with this issue. And he said, should we disclose?
And when we get to this, when we move on to day two, he gave a talk that I think got everyone a little scared.
Yes,
in the room.
Yeah,
about the, you know, he started discussing what is the downside of disclosure? What is the negative potential of disclosure? And we need to face it head on and be aware of it when we make our decisions about what we think we should be doing with this information. And that was a very interesting conversation.
Yeah, he was talking about that he wrestled with the ethics of bringing David Grush out. He was also instrumental in getting the footage of
the three famous videos.
For the big 2017 article, I suppose, was one of the ones that he was bringing
Lou Ellis. The Tic Tac video, the Go Fast, and the gimbal.
But he was kept up nights kind of wrestling with, am I doing the right thing here? You know, and getting this information out, and what are the ramifications of it? Even in his speech, he still seemed to be wrestling with it, because it felt to me he was going a little back and forth. Like, we've got to be extremely cautious and careful, and should we or shouldn't we? And then he came out all for disclosure. So I was like, okay, well, I guess he sort of worked it out for himself.
I think that was his design. He wanted to get people worried of what direction he was going. I think afterwards I went up to him and said, you know, I think you scared a lot of people there. Mm-hmm. And he said, that was deliberate.
Okay.
And I said, I thought so.
What I feel like the genie's out of the bottle. Toothpaste is out of the tube. I don't know how you don't disclose at this point. Yeah. And that seemed to be the overall theme, was just what is the best, most careful and considerate way to share this. And I think the problem is that I have wondered, maybe they just don't know, you know, what the hell this stuff is. That might partially be still true, but my growing concern is that they might
know what some of this is and what the and what they may perceive some motives or agendas that would be particularly upsetting to people.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that, you know, and that the acceleration towards disclosure, you know, it may be the product of a schedule that's been put in motion that is not a human schedule.
This I bump on, and you've said this a lot. I find it hard to believe that ET or non-human intelligence keep any sort of calendar. And if disclosure matters at all, like if they're just going to come and turn us into a farm, like what the fuck difference does disclosure make? I mean, they're just going to do it. I mean, disclosure suggests that we have some stake in this and that we have some say in this, and how we handle it is critical. Like it seemed to me, and I want to hear any counter argument to this, but I'm just like, it seemed to me the discussion was, what will we do to ourselves in light of the fact that whatever our the foundations of our religion are shaken, or that we might not like that our origin story is not what we thought it might be, or that I think it's the problem is we might, under the hot light of truth, we might not like those truths, and it just might be too jarring and society might not be able to withstand it. Versus, for example, I don't know what I get from this 2027 talk, which is like, well, I don't know, they just show up in a gigantic, ship and we're like, I don't know. Like suddenly there's two delis. One has non-human intelligence deli and the other one, like, I don't know. Is it we're suddenly alien nation? I'm not sure what the...
I don't know. Well, that's the thing, is it could be, it's the one thing that I keep realizing more and over and over again is that all the things I used to think, well, at least I don't have to believe that.
Yeah, I know.
As I progress, all of those things keep being taken away from me. All the things I think I don't have to believe, so the fact seems, it does seem like, whatever these non-human intelligences are, they are interacting with us, because a part of this story is the abduction story. The visitation story. It is, things like, the aerial school phenomena, actual interactions with these entities. So it's not inconceivable that there has been some sort of a plan, some sort of a timeline, and some sort of an idea of acclimatizing, perhaps, the population, which is one of the things that Carl Nell talked about in his talk, was what is the timeline for how we get from where we are right now, which is most people not thinking about it at all,
right,
to a world where everyone is on a daily basis in their reality knowledgeable of the fact that there are non-human intelligences on the planet,
right? Which may imply imply a greater sense of interaction necessary. I mean, I still think the sheer, because this appears to have been an ancient phenomenon, I'm always a little leery. I don't know. I've lived now through Y2K, 2012, 19. I've lived through a few. We both have, a few of these sort of like watch out dates. And I hope I continue to live through these dates. And it could be wishful thinking, whistling past the graveyard. But it did feel like this would be on us on how to respond. Yeah. And that if agency is taken away from us, disclosure doesn't matter.
It matters in terms, it still matters in terms of if we're being given time to be prepared, if we're giving time to minimize the disruption. Disclosure still, how disclosure happens. It's one of the conversations that, from day two. What was his name?
The University of Hawaii professor. He was all about
basically
catastrophic disclosure.
Yeah, his field is he tries to put together potential futures, mm-hmm. tries to outline what possible futures are based on current knowledge. Mm-hmm. And basically he came up with four potential futures that all ended in catastrophic disclosure.
Yeah.
That all ended in chaos.
Mm-hmm. Which I think disclosure is like you roll the ship out of the barn and you say, here it is, guys, or one country does it and all the other countries freak out and so forth. And listen, we're a stupid people. There's no question of how many different ways we could fuck this up just on our own. We don't need the help of non-human intelligence to screw up disclosure. But I don't know. My takeaway was still that this is kind of our problem to figure out, particularly if we're dealing with. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm just, Jairus Victor Grove, PhD from Hawaii. Mm-hmm. That was his doc. Crowded skies, atmospheric and orbital threat reduction in the age of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. Yes, so that's his name. My God, we're not even at the bottom of page one of day two.
Dave, we might have to do a recap another pod recapping. Yeah. We can just speckle in our recaps. So. But the one thing that I thought, first of all, Tim Galladay was... the retired admiral.
Real admiral, former headed NOAA.
Yeah, the Climate Ocean Agency.
National Oceanographic and I can't remember what all the acronyms stand for.
There were a lot of acronyms, but it was cool shit. Yeah. I mean, he was in charge of the weather.
Yes, the weather and the oceans. Yes, and his field now is he is very concerned about U.S. USO, you know, things under the ocean.
He was talking about one of his superiors during a huge mission. They, you know, because he was in charge of just a fleet of ships and, you know, and mm-hmm. personnel and support ships. And like this
he was off the East Coast during the all the sightings that Ryan Graves disclosed.
And he recorded that there was an email that went out to him and to everybody because these things were everywhere. And it said, if any of you know what these are, tell me now, because we are having near misses with almost every flight. And this email went out and it was, the same mission Ryan Graves was on when they were experiencing this.
Off the coast of Virginia, I think it was in a staging ground mm-hmm. for training before going into active war zones.
And the next day, the email was wiped.
Yes.
And
no one discussed it.
And the next day in the meeting, nobody brought it up. And he goes, oh, this is an SAP. He knew what that meant. This meant that they had just brushed up against some secret access program. And he was angry about the overclassification that was going on because this was endangering pilots. He was like, what the fuck is going on? This is, you know, this is a danger to pilots, but we don't know what it is. And they're classifying it and we can't figure it out and they won't tell us. And if we say anything, you know, you get blacklisted and you'll get, you know, in trouble.
Career ending.
Mm-hmm. He is doing. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was saying. And so he was there at the time when Ryan Graves was flying. And they were having to scrub missions, like training missions, because they had too many UFOs in the air. And these were the UFOs that were described that were visually spotted by pilots and described them as a dark cube inside a translucent sphere. You know where the corners of the cube touch the exterior, you know, or the interior walls of this translucent sphere, and that these things were hanging motionless in the air in category 4 hurricane strength winds for hours, just hanging there without like as though they were sitting on a rock in the middle of the sky in category 4 hurricane winds. And in case you're wondering, listeners or viewers, that's impossible. nothing we have can do that. When we go up and we're in the, you know, it's like if you jump in a river, the river's going to move you in one direction and you have to exert a lot of energy to stay in one place. If you're in a river, mm-hmm. if you've ever swum in a river, you know, it's exhausting. And these things were just stock still in these incredibly strong winds. And then they would suddenly depart at hypersonic speeds without any signature, without any sonic booms.
His entire thing is the underwater UAPs.
Yes.
And that's really cool. He really wants to put together the same. He wants essentially a Galileo project for the oceans. There's a guy named
and he is working with Ryan Graves.
He's working with Ryan Graves. He's working with a guy named Victor Vescovo, who is sort of the Neil Armstrong of the oceans, and in terms of mapping the deep ocean trenches, who's helping him. You know, wants to look for UAPs, USOs, I suppose they're called.
Yes, and they actually sent him out to look for something off the coast of
San Diego, where the Tic Tacs are. Yeah. And he apparently found something.
Yeah. Yes.
That appears
to something a little unexplainable.
Well, he says he found there's essentially sort of a mountain wall, and he found like a wedged piece of rock that has been taken out about a kilometer. This colossal
and dropped off.
Yeah, about 2 kilometers away, like this boulder was moved like a wedge, and did not look in any way explicable through natural phenomenon. But
it's not how things move under the ocean.
Typically, you know, no.
Like huge, heavy rocks don't just get swept up and moved somewhere.
And they have not had a chance to sort of look in to see what is under that kind of wedge space. But some of the other stuff that. Some of the other stuff he said the White House does not want disclosure, and that is why that disconnect is happening. That why, as we discussed earlier, he was another one saying, you know, and it was funny about the overclassification. This was what was so cool about the audience, because everybody in the audience is like, he pointed to Chris Mellon. He's like, Chris, what's going on with the overclassification of these military photos? And Chris Mellon, who I guess is in touch with all these people regarding who's classifying and not classifying, said that more and better imagery of the Nimitz sightings are coming soon. He didn't know how clear they would be allowed to go or get.
Yes. Said it wouldn't be the best stuff they have, but it will be better.
But they was just talking with the, and these were, come on, these, this was like, this room was filled with like Illuminati. I mean, come on. I just like, you know, Chris Mellon has a very interesting, very nice guy. We would love to have him on. Pod anytime. Yeah. Any of these people, Tim Galladay, we want to have on.
Tim Galladay would be fantastic.
We met some folks who seem to. We think we'll have some wonderful guests as a result of this visit, because I will share, and then we should probably wrap up this round of our of our Sol recap. But I kind of worked up the courage to say hi to Whitley Strieber. Some call Whitley Strieber. I'm not sure if it's Strieber or Strieber, but so I went up to him and I said, I thanked him for a letter that he sent to me many years ago when I was 15, because I had read Communion and was profoundly impacted by it. And it wasn't because I had been abducted or anything. I was, I had been like a lucid dreamer, and, you know, I had my ghost stories, and I just wanted to like be in the conversation. It was just, I felt an incredible connection to the book. So he was very sweet and was like, thank you. And he had written me back just being like, yeah, Tom, you know, like lots of people are, and who knows what this is and whatever. But I felt a part of the community then. And he thanked me for like sharing that with him. And we sort of talked for a minute. And it was definitely a cool moment, because my mom had passed a couple of years ago, and I knew she was like, would be totally into that exchange, because she was just sort of so kind of into that, and she would have loved this entire mind-blowing weekend. She just would have been so, and was there. I could, you know, there was also a fabulous rainbow that I pointed out to you several times until I started to feel like maybe I pointed out one too many times, but it was you were like, at one point you were like, yeah, I see the rainbow, Tom. I was like, okay, all right, I'm getting a little too excited about it. But there's more to discuss here. Like the Carl Nell talk in itself could take up an hour, because there's a lot to unpack there. So hey, we should do this again. We should start a podcast on this topic.
All right, but it's kind of cliche.
I agree.
Podcasting.
It's getting a little it's a little old, but you know, we're here. I bought the mic.
Yes. Finally. Made things so much better. Yeah. Made things so much easier.
I know. So I figured out finally how to get all this stuff tech going. But it would be good to see you in person again. That was fun.
Yeah.
Our weekends are fun with you and Chrissy, and we're whooping it up.
So that we still got about a half a page, but we'll come back to it.
Listen, there's only so many mysteries of the universe we can solve in one podcast. I think we've blown some minds.
There's a lot in this pamphlet.
We've blown some fucking minds today. And we will continue to recap. We'll be recapping this. I'll be recapping these this weekend for the rest of my life. Okay. I'm going to be.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm going
to
be.
No, this was truly, we were privileged to be present at what I think is truly is going to be held up as an historic event. For quite some time.
It was amazing to be there. Yeah, it was an extraordinary kind of grouping of individuals who have, you know, been at this for a good long while, who have been just huge in terms of moving the story. And it remains unbelievable to me. Yeah. And yet, like I said, we said at the beginning, like disclosure is well underway.
And we may have had the opportunity to be a part of history very near the end of human history.
Well, and that's the wonderful. We want to leave that with you on this and these holidays, this approaching holiday.
Have yourself a merry little last Christmas.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave. I'm going to take the Avi Loeb approach. It's all positive. It's all good. We're going to learn new technologies. It's going to change our future. AI is going to be friendly. We're going to raise it right. It's going to make friends with the whatever it is. We're going to keep on trucking. We are a flawed but enduring sentience. We're a human. We're human intelligence.
Nice. There's some really good stuff about our species.
Come on, it's all you know. List them.
Some of us, look great naked.
Yeah,
I mean that's something.
Yeah, I don't know if those two are reprehensible. Yeah,
there are people out there that just going all the way back to the Romans and the Greeks.
Doing my best.
Oh, my God.
Hey, listen, you're a good man. That's what I'll say.
Tom.
As human intelligences go,
I'm glad. I'm glad the three of us got to share this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Up at Stanford.
Yep.
And, you know, and a lot to think about, a lot of interesting people that we met, and more to come.
Leave your questions, like and subscribe to Really with Tom and Dave on our YouTube channel. And thank you, Chrissy, and thank you, Adam.
Check our Instagram.
And we will catch you.
And thanks to everyone. Thanks to everyone over at Stampede who made this possible.
Yes. Yes.
For us to make this trip.
Amazing. So lots more to discuss. And I look forward to our next one, buddy.
Yep. And please learn to love us, Gary Nolan.
Please.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.